good
joining
one.
Us right now is Steven Shainberg. And if you haven't seen a movie called Secretary, you got to see it. It was awarded the Best First Screenplay at the recent Independent Spirit Awards and was the winner of a special jury prize for originality at this year's Sundance Film Festival. It's a very unique love story. I actually watched the whole thing yesterday. It's a fascinating movie, and you got some incredible performances out of it as well.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, to have a woman like Maggie Gyllenhaal play her first big role in a film like this is just such an incredible opportunity for a director, because you don't have any associations to her. You don't know who she is. So she is this girl. It's not somebody giving a performance. You have no previous associations to who she is. And to couple her with James Spader, you know, who has an enormous amount of authority as an actor, because he's done so many films and he's so talented, was just a fantastic combination.
Right, he certainly has a lot of authority in this film as well, doesn't he?
Well, it's a film in certain ways about authority and about what's underneath authority sometimes for men, at least as far as his character is concerned.
What was Maggie's reaction to the script when she first saw it?
You know, it was kind of one of these fortuitous, wonderful situations where the right actress meets the right piece of material with the right filmmaker at the right time. I think it happens every few years, like Emily Watson in Breaking the Waves or Hilary Swank in Boys Don't Cry. Once in a while, you get this meeting where all the stars are aligned. And she came in, and even though so much of the film is played on her face and on her silent, below the surface emotional reactions, she got it. And she understood that, and she understood the potential complexity of the role and the enormous sort of transformation that the character goes through. And immediately when she came in for her first audition, we were speaking the same language about the movie. That, for example, even though it's about, in certain ways, sadomasochism and the way power is exchanged between people in an intimate relationship, she also understood how funny it could be and how tender it could be and how much vulnerability and humanity the character could have. And so it was a kind of little miracle.
It's a fascinating film.
Thank you so much. I think so, too.
And on many levels, it works really well. The things that you're dealing with here, for instance, mental health, self-mutilation, these are things that aren't usually explored in film.
Absolutely. I mean, I think the film, you know, this is one of the reasons why it was so difficult to get made and why the, you know, powerful, positive audience reaction has been so gratifying. I mean, you know, we made a movie for $3 million and Maggie Gyllenhaal gets nominated for a Golden Globe Award. I mean, it's unheard of, you know, so I think at the, you know, trying to get the film made stage, a lot of people looked at the material and thought it would be scary and dark and creepy and ugly. You know, sort of the cliched interpretation or vision of sadomasochism and things like self-mutilation. But there's a playful, humorous, fairy tale quality to the filmmaking, which brings a lot of wonder and innocence to the film, as does Maggie Gyllenhaal. So it's really not what you think. And that's one of the challenges of the movie and sort of getting people to rent the DVD and the video is it's just not what you think. You're going to sit down and you're going to watch the film, and as it unfolds, you're going to be continually surprised by its vision.
There's a mix, though, in this film of shock, of even semi-horror, of humor, and also a fascination. There's just so many different aspects to it.
Yeah.
I was immediately, you know, when you see the first signs of the self-mutilation, it's a shock to
the system.
Absolutely,
but the interesting thing is, just by the way, and I always remind people of this, you never see her cut herself. It's amazing, but, you know, you see her very early on press a little ballerina against her leg,
right?
Which is, as you say, it's a combination of elements, as is the whole film. I mean, a ballerina is a very childlike, beautiful, fairy tale-like object.
And peaceful, too.
Exactly.
Yes.
And she's doing something scary with it, but you never see any blood. You never even see her cut herself. You see her contemplate cutting herself.
It kind of reminded me, that scene kind of reminded me of the crucifix scene in The Exorcist.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, I think, and one of the interesting things about the movie is how her self-destructive impulses transform through her relationship with Spader into something that is healing. And it's a kind of miracle for that character, and I think very mysterious and truthful, you know, that it can be that.
There also is a truth that comes through here that many people say that there is somebody for everybody. And in this particular film, two people who have specific needs that are outside the norm find what they're looking for.
Yeah, which is, I think, one of the reasons why, you know, the film did so well at the box office and got so much attention, is that when you sit through the movie and connect with the characters, even though they are odd and very particular, what they feel, which is a desire to have love in their life, is very familiar to people. I mean, that's one of the fun things about the movie, is that as you go through it, you find yourself saying somehow, gosh, I do get that. I know about that. And so it you know, in the end, it may be a subject matter which is very left of center, but I think in the end, it's a tender, beautiful love story.
How did you get involved in finding Miri's short story that started the whole thing?
Well, you know, when Bad Behavior, Mary Gateskill's collection of short stories, in which the story Secretary appears, when that came out, you know, a lot of people were very excited about it because it dealt with issues of female sexuality that, though familiar to people, had never in that way been written about.
This was about a decade ago, too.
It was about a decade ago. And it's just a remarkable collection of stories. I mean, I think that there may be 8-10 stories in it, and every single one of them is fantastic. And she writes with a voice that in some ways, although the film is entirely different from the story, I think the film is true in some way to her voice, because the voice deals with, the point of view in the stories deals with things that are maybe scary and very sexually charged, but in an extremely innocent way, and in a playful way, and in a, you know, not in a way that is necessarily creepy. And that's something which I personally thought was true. You know, that I think we have a vision of these kinds of things, or the cliche is that they're so dark and they take place in caves. And, you know, when you look at the film Secretary, it actually takes place in this wonderfully beautiful office. So, you know, almost like a dreamscape. And I think sadomasochism and sexuality for a lot of people can feel that way, too. It doesn't have to be something that's ugly.
Right. And we've actually spoken about that. We've actually had a mistress from a dungeon here.
Right.
And we've discussed this as an alternative lifestyle. And this is very warmly portrayed in this film.
Absolutely.
Now, you also have something else coming out, I understand, called Hit Me.
Yes.
Tell me about that.
That's a film that I made before Secretary, which is based on a novel by Jim Thompson. And Jim Thompson wrote the novels that The Grifters and After Dark My Sweet were based on, the Stephen Frears movie and the James Foley film. And it's a kind of a dark, funny, odd noir starring Elias Koteas and William H. Macy and a wonderful French actress named Laura Marsac. And it's funny, it's not, although the title is Hit Me, it doesn't have any sadomasochistic connotations.
That's a good S&M title anyway.
Exactly, yeah. But it's more of a film about a sort of lovable loser who gets involved in a crime that he shouldn't get involved in because of a woman who seduces him.
Hmm.
So I think it's interesting to look at the two films together because they both have a kind of otherworldly look, and Hit Me is a particularly beautiful film. It was shot by a guy named Mark Gordon, who's an incredible cinematographer, and it it has just a real beautiful vibrancy on the screen.
Yeah, I was just thinking that watching Secretary, it's a great film, and everybody out there, you can buy it or rent it. It's already out now on VHS and DVD. It's an amazing film.
Thank you.
But I'll tell you something, that the moment that got me hooked was the first time that the boss bent over his secretary.
Well, sure, you're waiting for it.
I mean, it was just amazing.
I know, it's one of those scenes, and obviously that is a scene which is, by the way, in Mary Gateskill's story, although it doesn't have the tone that it has in the film. But, you know, the entire movie, turns on that scene, obviously.
Right.
Everything shifts for both of them.
Right.
And it's such a beautiful moment where he tells her to bend over the desk, and she says, "I don't understand." And he says, one of my favorite lines in the movie, "There's nothing to understand."
Yeah.
Which is, you know, in a certain way, what's happening between them is beyond any kind of explanation that I might give or that you might give after watching the film.
You mentioned briefly about the difficulty in getting this thing financed.
Sure.
How did it come about? How did you end up getting someone who actually got what you were trying to do?
Well, you know, it's sort of that, you know, old independent filmmaker story where you take your wares around from producer to producer to producer, and you pray. And there were a lot of people, I live in New York, and I know a lot of the New York independent producers, and they had seen Hit Me, which is a very stylish and kind of cool movie. And they wanted to do another film with me, but when I would bring them this script, they would say, "Well, we'd love to do a movie with you, but not this movie." And finally, a friend of mine told me about a company, which I didn't know, called Double A Films, and they had made a film called Sunday, which had won the Sundance Film Festival a couple of years earlier. And a producer there named Andrew Fierberg read the script, and he got that the movie could be funny. I don't know if he exactly trusted that I was going to make it funny and that I was going to make it moving and tender and human. He didn't want to make it if it was going to be exploitive.
Right.
And a lot of people read the script and they felt that that's what it would be. But he trusted me.
Did you have Maggie and James on board by then?
Nope. I had nothing.
Because that would have been an easier sell, I would think.
Yeah, and you know, one of the great stories of this film is that the only way we really could finance it is, you know, with an actor like Spader, you know, who has name value and all that.
Right.
And when I met with him, he asked me, "Who do you want to play the lead girl?" And I said, "Listen, you know, give me 24 hours, go home and look at this videotape of her audition. This is the girl I want. She hasn't really done anything."
Uh-huh.
And he went home, and that night he called me, and he said, "Absolutely, she's brilliant. I want to do it with her." So, you know, it's because he was willing to take the chance, too, and take the chance on the material and me, that the movie was makeable.
Well, the interesting thing is that Spader obviously commands that kind of respect and authority.
Yeah.
And that Maggie has in her face that sensitivity, that vulnerability that's necessary in the film.
Yeah. I mean, I think one of the keys that we all knew when we were auditioning people was that you couldn't cast an actress in that role who the audience would feel was being taken advantage of or who was being, in a sense, manipulated. When you watch the movie, you feel that Maggie Gyllenhaal's character is always making her own decisions. In some way, she's in control of the choices she makes. So, for example, when Spader spanks her for the first time, she's choosing not to run out of the room.
Right.
And you feel that from her.
Mm-hmm.
And that has to do with who she is as a person. She has that inner strength and inner sense of herself as a person, and that was something that, you know, I felt the moment she came into the room.
Right.
Whereas a lot of actresses, I think, would have played the part as somebody who was being told what to do, and that wasn't what we wanted. She needed to have
a choice. Right.
She needed to make the choice.
Yeah, right.
Exactly.
What are you working on now? Anything else that's coming out that we should know about?
Yeah, I'm doing two things that I'm just sort of overjoyed about. The first is with the same screenwriter that I worked with on Secretary, Aaron Cressida Wilson, we're making a film for Ed Pressman, a well-known independent producer, about Deanne Arbus, a very famous photographer from the 60s. And I'm writing a script with Buck Henry.
Oh, really?
Who wrote The Graduate and To Die For and many
Get
other
Smart.
Films. And a lot of other, yeah, Get Smart, exactly. Few people know that.
Yeah.
So we're doing a movie based on a book by a woman named A.M. Holmes called Music for Torching. And it's kind of American Beauty pushed further out into the realm of Secretary.
Wow.
Yeah, so those are kind of two of the key things I'm working on, both of which I'm just sort of giggly with excitement over.
Well, it sounds good, and we're giggling with excitement. Looking forward to having them come out. And
so I really appreciate it.
Stephen Schoenberg, it was a pleasure meeting you. I hope we talk again sometime.
Thank you so much.
Take care. Bye-bye.